to have it, but I'm kind of glad I canceled it because of all the weather and everybody's been without electricity and everything. And then tomorrow night it's supposed to be raining and freezing and snowing, and so probably would be a kind of a bad night to get everybody out. Has anybody got any Bible questions? I wonder if Sister Inez is okay. Has anybody heard from her? I wonder if she's... Is her out? She, her power's off? Okay. Our electricity come on last night. We were glad for that. All right. Who's is still out? Brother Crafton, Brother Mark Boyds. Y'all's are still out, huh? Well, Stewart's are still out. Mm-hmm. Bryant's, are they out? Golden's. Jerry and Sandra's still out. So, sure makes you appreciate electricity, don't it? We had a litter of pups Saturday, or Friday. All right, well, if nobody's got any Bible questions, I've got some. I'd like to get some of y'all's thoughts on perfection. What you think it is. What's it take to make it? What is perfection? Bible perfection. Okay. Let me get you the mic. Hold on a minute. Sister Ruth, don't go anywhere. I got another question I want you to answer.
It's interesting to me that it seems like in the New Testament that they were people just like us that had, they got mad. They did things that, you know, we look back on and think, you know, I'm surprised they did that, you know. They did things that made, you know, makes me look at them like they weren't perfect like we think perfection ought to be. And so I would like your take on that.
Can you give us an example of?
Well, for example, Paul got mad at the when he was in a council and when somebody told him he got slapped, you know, in the face, and you know, he kind of got, it seemed to me like he got mad about it. And he stirred up the town and over it. And
what did he do when he got slapped?
Huh? Well, he repented, but I'm just saying.
He didn't repent till he found out who he's talking to, did
right.
He? When he found out it was a priest, high priest, or the.
Well, Jesus taught to turn
who was
your
that?
Cheek.
Let's get that.
Jesus taught to turn your cheek when you get slapped. Okay, and he didn't have that spirit, you know, to turn his cheek.
Well, he might have had his head turned when he talked when he said something. Where's my phone at? I've left it. It's It's in my car. Don't worry. It's not home.
Brother Smith, I'm down to about about 2 or 3 weeks of finishing, going through the whole Bible this year. It's the first time I've did the chronological deal like you've been telling us.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed doing it. I just want you to know I appreciate you encouraging me to do it.
Yes, but, in fact, while you're saying that right there, I'm going to recommend that we go another year just so we can really get the time frames in our mind of when the Bible was written, that we read it another year. And by the way, if you have a smartphone, an Android or an iPhone, the Olive Tree Bible Study app is a free app. And they've upgraded it and put new reading plans on it, and it has the chronological plan in it now. So you can just, and it shows you every day, you know, every day you can read it, and it knows what you read, and tomorrow it'll take right back up where you left off. And so if
Does
you
have,
I mean, I will pass out new plans, but written, you know, if you need them. But I'm just telling you, if you do have a smartphone and you've got the Olive Tree Bible Study app, which I think is the best Bible study app that there is on smartphones, and it's on all platforms. It has it too. And YouVersion will read to you out loud if you want to lay in the bed. I got tired of them bugging me about, you know, my Bible reading plan. Rather than not, I was caught up or, you know, always writing me about something. I got tired of that. I don't know if you can get off of that. Because I get an email from them almost weekly or 2 or 3 times a week sometimes. Can you? I have to figure out how to do that. Anyway, that YouVersion Bible app also, and it's audible, so you can lay down at night and let it read to you, you know, if you want to listen to it or while you're setting up. It's called YouVersion Bible. I believe that's right, isn't it, Brother Doug? Huh? Y-O-U, yeah, Y-O-U Version Bible. No, it's not on Olive Tree, it's a separate app. And it will audibly read to you, and it'll keep you up. It's got the chronological plan, too. That's what I read by this year. But the Olive Tree, if you've got Olive Tree, it just came out with an update on plans. So, did anybody look up while we're talking? Huh? It was a high priest, wasn't it? Paul, earnestly beholding the council of slave men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. And he said unto them, God smite thee, thou whited wall, for sittest thou to judge me after the law and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law. They that stood by said, revilest thou God's high priest? And said Paul, I wish not, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of the people. But when Paul perceived that the one part were the Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, men and brethren. So he's kind of used that to his advantage. I don't know if he actually repented there. It just looks like he just gave his excuse, you know, that I didn't know it was the high priest, which is kind of amazing, isn't it, that he wouldn't know who the high priest of the Jews were. He'd been checked out too long, I guess, and quit keeping up with it. You know, his biggest enemy, though, was the Jewish sects. And you'd have thought he'd have known. You know, I know every time the Pope changes hands, every time the Pope dies and we get a new one, I know who it is. Of course, they didn't have the media like we got. He may have been gone on his missionary journey and got back and didn't know they changed. Anyway, I'll have to agree with Brother Mark. Some, it does look like it stirred him just a little bit. he had him to slap him. He came right back with an answer pretty quick. Said, "Let God smite you, you whited wall." It sounded like he wasn't having any compassion for the guy. But you can be mad and sin not. So we just have to kind of take it take it for granted. However, let me just say this. I do believe that I do believe that, you know, these men, they weren't perfect. They were striving for perfection. They weren't all perfect. I had someone recently in the body talking to me about one of our chief elders. And he said, "I actually believe he's an overcomer, Brother Smith." He said, "I know you don't believe that," but he said, "I do." And I said, "Well, he may, I said, "I can't find a whole lot of fault with him myself, but, we can't." I said, "But I don't think there's any overcomers among us right now, but I'm not going to say you couldn't be like in the old covenant, that you might be keeping sin under, you know, but Jesus, perfection, Jesus said you can't think it. You know, he that looketh on a woman, he that saith to his brother, Raca, which means thou fool." You airhead is kind of what it means. Well, it does. I mean, that's a modern term for it, for Raca. empty-headed fool, I think. So, you can't, without a cause, you couldn't slander your brother if you're slandering him, you know.
Uh-huh. The word perfect or overcomer. The word, are you an overcomer? Well, you could say yes, because I'm in the process of overcoming. I'm one who is overcoming.
Yeah, I've used that. In fact, we were in a discussion a few years ago, and in the discussion I made the statement that you can be an overcomer and not be a perfect overcomer. And the brethren that were in the discussion said, we can accept that. We'll agree with that. That you can be overcoming all that you know to do. Revelations 2 and 3, yeah.
He said, he was wanting to know what they thought about that, but evidently he was considering that an overcomer, a person who is overcoming.
Okay, yes, I do know what you're talking about. I've got some different thoughts on the seven churches, the letters, and the promises to overcomers. If you go to Revelation 2 and 3, where the Lord started out writing these letters, or having John write these letters to these seven churches, I'm glad Sister Weiniger made it. She's kind of like, you know, when the elephant was looked down at the mouse and said, "How come you're so small?" The little mouse said, "I've been sick." And she's been a little bit sick. Where do y'all get a top like that? Is there any more of them anywhere? Still available? Well, I just thought, you know, maybe some of us might want to get one. That may start a uniform. Anyway, let me say this about, I have a position on the seven churches, these promises to overcomers to the seven churches. But there's two ways of looking at it because of the date of the book of Revelation. As a general rule, theology has put the date of the writing of the book of Revelation in AD 95. If you'll research that, you will find out that that dating came in this way. Polycarp was a disciple of John, the Apostle John. And Polycarp knew Irenaeus. Now, Irenaeus is known to be a Catholic historian and priest. And he was, since he was a historian, he wrote quite a few things. And Irenaeus wrote down that Polycarp said to him that the name of the Antichrist, he said, Polycarp said that there's no reason for us to need to know the name of the Antichrist. For if that how did he exactly say it? He said, if that was necessary, that would have been revealed by the one who received it. And that that's what he said. Okay, Eusebius, Irenaeus was from about AD 120 till about 2, or AD 105 to about 220 AD. Eusebius was a Catholic priest, and in AD 300s, he quoted what Irenaeus said, but it's real ambiguous how he said it. That he said, if we were to know the name of the, and he got it from, and he said that he got it from Irenaeus, his writings. And that the name of the Antichrist would have been revealed by the one that received it, and being almost in Irenaeus's day lets us to know that the writing took place in the late 90s. And so it's real ambiguous that he's talking about. Is he talking about that John the writer, that the apocalypse itself? Or what he was referring to as that? If you read his statement, but they dated the book of Revelation in AD 95 by what Eusebius said, that Irenaeus said that he got from Polycarp. And it's real ambiguous. The other position, which is my position, is that the book of Revelation was written before AD 70. The reason, and I'm trying not to take this position because it fits how I'm seeing the letters written to the seven churches, because I want it to be right. But here's what makes a lot of sense to me. Number one, if you read these letters to the seven churches, if you start out in the book of Revelation, it tells you that in the very first verse, the revelation of Jesus Christ, which God gave unto him to show unto his servants things which must shortly come to pass. And he sent and signified it by his angel unto his servant John. So there's something that was going to come to pass very shortly that God wanted Jesus to reveal to the church. And Jesus didn't even know it until he got back to heaven. God revealed it to him. And so he sent an angel to show it to John. And verse 3 said, "Blessed is he that readeth, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein, for the time is at hand." So the only event that took place that was shortly going to come to pass, if it was written before AD 70, would have been the destruction of Israel in AD 70. The other reason that I think this is because, number one, I always thought that the Isle of Patmos was a very barren, remote, just barren island that they just banished John on. If you study the history of it, you'll find out that the Isle of Patmos was a very lucrative island. It was very busy. It was had a lot of import and export. It was beautiful in its day. It was very well populated. You say, well, how could John been banished on it? When an emperor of a Rome exiled someone, they just put them, just like y'all remember when Solomon, who was it that Solomon put Simei, wasn't it? That he put him in a city and said, "You leave that city and I'll kill you. But you can live there and stay there," because he cursed his father. And he did, and he knew he probably would do that, and he did leave there, and he did kill him. Well, he was exiled to that city. He couldn't leave that city, but he could live there and stay there. That's what happened to John. John was exiled to the Isle of Patmos, and he could live there and stay there, but he couldn't leave that city. And the reason the emperor did that is because he caused too much trouble in the churches, in the synagogues. He exiled him to one spot and said, "You stay there. You leave that spot and I'll kill you." But when an emperor of Rome, if you study the history and law of Rome, when an emperor of Rome exiled someone, they remained exiled until that emperor died. When that emperor died, they were free. And in AD 68, John left Patmos. And that's when Nero died. And he went to Ephesus, and history proves that he died there. So, if he was on the Isle of Patmos when he wrote this. Nero died in 68, and John died in Ephesus. So he was freed when Nero died. Unless Demetrius, who is the next Caesar, exiled him again. We have no record of that. So I think it makes good sense, number one, that AD 70 was about to take place when Nero died in AD 68. I don't think we can go by tradition of the Catholic Church that Polycarp said, Eusebius said that Irenaeus said that Polycarp said, and what Eusebius said about it was very ambiguous. I'll get you that statement in a minute. I've got it wrote down. So to me, the Lord was telling the Gentile churches in AD 68, you can still make it. You can still be overcomers. There's some of you that are close. Remember this, there was a lot of Jews in those churches. They had fled out of Jerusalem in the persecution and went to Asia Minor and went to many of Paul's churches, and there was a lot of Jews in those churches at that time. So there was a lot of Jews that could overcome. There may not have been too many Gentiles that could have grasped enough to overcome, but there was Jews in those churches. That's all about, it's about narrowed down to the seven churches of Asia. And so my position is that the book of Revelation was written before AD 70, and that these letters were written to urge these people to keep striving. You can make perfection. And that's why the promises of perfection were made, because I do not believe anybody could have made perfection in AD 95. You say, well, Brother Smith, what if you're wrong? What if it was written in AD 95? Then my position changes. My position changes to this, that the promises to overcomers were, keep striving for perfection and you'll come up in the resurrection of the just in the Gentile world, because you still have a promise of an overcomer and making the bride. So either way, I can handle it because it fits with the resurrection of the just. But I really feel like it's more reasonable to consider that that these seven letters were written before AD 70 to prepare people for the destruction that was about. The time was at hand. And how did he say it in the first verse? To show you the things that must shortly come to pass. And he was warning them and telling them, yes.
Because thou hast kept thy word of my patience, thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth.
Wait just a minute. I'm sorry. I was looking in the wrong chapter. 3:10. Okay. Yes, yeah, I put it there, last prophetical hour for the end of the Jewish world. That word temptation is also it's also means trial or proving, the trial of you by proving you. So, you know, I think he's telling them, there's some of them that are living an overcoming life and close to making it. And if this was written like in AD 68, actually before AD 68, because Nero died in 68, and that's when John would have been freed. Now, some say he was exiled by Demetrius after AD 70. See, another thought on this is that John would have had to been like 90-something years old I mean, he would have had to have been ancient himself.
That there were overcomers made during the early church.
Yes.
Now, did the early church end at AD 70? Since there was such destruction and they scattered them?
Ask that again.
Would it be possible to be an overcomer then after AD 70?
Not in my opinion. Maybe up to about AD 78. Well, that's where I carry it to.
Well, you carry it to 78.
I carry it that they had 7.5 years of wrath. But I'd say the bride was made up by AD 70, really, of that day. But, you know, I wouldn't argue with, because I put the date of the red horse in AD 78, so there could have been some white hairs that finished up during the wrath of God being poured out in the last prophetical hour of their day.
So is there any period after that?
No. No. There wasn't enough truth. And there wasn't any. It was down to Gentiles. Gentiles didn't have enough platform to make perfection in my opinion. Go ahead, Brother Martin.
The writings of John, especially from Patmos, I guess he wrote St. John.
It was written, yes, somewhere down the same. They say they're dated similarly the same. And 1st, 2nd, 3rd John was written.
He had the truth. And was anybody else at that time reaching perfection?
Well, see, up to AD 70, I'm saying. I'm saying John died in AD 70 or right about that time. No, 95 is when they're saying. I'm saying that when an emperor died, if he exiled you, you were free. And Nero died in AD 68. Now, yes, he persecuted the churches under heavy persecution. He was free. He would have been freed by 68, so he would have written this prior to 68.
What was the length of that hour?
15 years. 7.5 years. They had an hour and a day, actually. They had more time than we've got. They had the 30-year period and a 15-year period, a 45-year period, day of the Lord. Where we're only showing, but the hour that was a 15-year period, the hour of the last prophetical hour, which would, the last half of that would have been the hour of temptation or the day of vengeance or the day of his wrath. Day of Pentecost. AD 33.5. Mm-hmm. So if you add 45 years to that, that's AD 77.5 or AD 78. If you add 7.5 years to AD 70, 77.5 plus the half year of AD 33.5 takes you to AD 78. And that ended the white horse, and the red horse was from AD 78 to 178. Then the black horse had 360 years, takes you to 538, which is when papacy came in full rule. Paul. No, yeah. He knew that after his departure, the church was going to fall away. And he knew that because he knew there wasn't any Gentile apostles that could actually hold it that weren't that were they were going to make the they would make the bride if they were if they had enough truth to make it. I mean, to hold it, they'd have enough truth to make the bride. So I think he knew they'd make the bride, and he knew that the Gentiles. You just got to understand, that's why I keep drilling this over and over, that Gentiles, they just didn't have the background or the platform. You got to understand, when this opened up to the whole Gentile world, there wasn't nothing in their minds that caused them to really understand what who Christ was, what he came to do. But if you knew the law and the history of Israel and the prophets and all the experiences of Israel, you would have seen Christ and the purpose of God in Christ. That would have opened up to you if God would have revealed it to you. But if you was a Gentile, there wasn't nothing. You had a blank mind concerning the God of Israel and the law and the principles and statutes of righteousness. It took time for Gentiles to put all this puzzle together, and different groups of Gentiles are getting in. All kinds of ideologies was coming about. That's why you really, I think you're going to have to really see that God caused the Catholic Church to come about. It was God's will. He controlled that. It brought the gospel into a certain order. It was a carnal order, but it was order. God did that to bring about a certain order for the church. So, I can't remember the name. Hess, yes, from Louisville. Cincinnati, yes. Yeah, he's been with us a few times, and good to have you today. Amen. All right, anyway, so that's a thought I've been dwelling on some lately, to understand that, see, you got to understand, God loves his creation. He loves mankind, for God so loved the world. And this is a big job he's working on, and so he put, I was enjoying yesterday, I had a talk with Brother Finnicum, Brother Howard Finnicum. He'll be with us tonight. There's a man, a minister, that built the New Life Baptist Church in Benton that Brother Finnicum came up under and surrendered to the call of the ministry under, and he died this past week, and Brother Finnicum's coming to his funeral, so he's going to be with us tonight. And but I was visiting with him, and he was, you know, while I was talking to him, he started giving me some of the history of the Spaniard race of people that migrated into the Western world. And of course, he's got a missionary work in Honduras, which I wondered when he first went there whether or not God really called him or if he just went, because it took quite a while for him to have any fruit of his labors. But when I listened to him talk yesterday, I knew God sent him there, because he started talking about all the history and how God brought all of these people about where they are. And I knew when God sends you on a missionary work, you have to have answers for why am I going here? What is God doing here? How did these people come about? You've got to have some answers you need to know that God sent you and what God's doing if you're going to figure out how to work with him. And I just, you know, that confirmed that with me. But anyway, we were just talking, and I was sharing this thought with him about how I'm seeing that God formed the Catholic Church. That might be a new wrinkle on your horn, but just remember, he's in charge of everything. He controls everything men do. That doesn't mean that it was his perfect will, but it's just the best that God could do under the situation. But he had something way down the line he was looking at. Okay.
You know, and he became the first pope. But it wasn't long, they were persecuting the true Christians. So if God was in the Catholic Church at all, you may not be saying what I imagine. You know, if God wanted to have the Catholic Church, then did he use that to persecute his people?
God knows what men are going to do, and he controls what they do. And he knew that he could put it in the minds of men. He knew that for him to get, there had to be some order in established to bring some kind of order to work with and to get his, and the, you know, look where all the reformers came from. They came out of the Catholic Church. Men like Wycliffe and Huss and Martin Luther. That's where they came from. God put them under an order that was carnal until he could begin to work with some men in that and begin to develop them in a greater understanding of the Word of God. He put it in their hearts not to destroy the Word of God or do away with it. But he also didn't let them translate it. And don't tell him what a mess it would have been in if he had let them translate it. He kept it in its original condition and in Latin and kept it chained to pulpits until it was time that he had men who were reformers that would begin to reveal a greater understanding than what could be revealed before that. It's just, you got to see God's, he has infinite wisdom. And he controls what men does, but he can't make men. You know, I mean, he could make you do anything, but it's not his will to force himself on people. He uses it to accomplish his will. And it's a tremendous wisdom to see how God works, or it's tremendous to see God's wisdom, the wisdom of how he works. The more I learn about him, the bigger he gets. You know, he's a great God. Let me read you this let me read you what I put together here on the date of the book of Revelation, just to reveal my position on it at this time. Of course, everything I teach, I tell you, it's subject to change, unless it's something we're established on. I'm not changing on hell, the Godhead, the devil, or anything that I feel like is absolutely established. There's more light, I think, will come on the devil subject because the ministry's not enough together on it. And I say anything the ministry's not together on, there has to be more adjustments made to it, or we're not in the middle yet. We're not on middle ground. We hadn't found the balance of doctrine. Anyway, I'm not changing on what the ministry's together on. But what we're not together on, I'm still writing in pencil. Now here, on the date, it's important to address. I've got this in my notes I'm writing a commentary on the book of Revelation, so this is a beginning note. So it's important to address the date of the date the book of Revelation was written, since there are two dates to be considered, an early date and a late date. Those who hold to the late date have it written during the time of Domitian Caesar, A.D. 95 to 96. This date was determined by the following statement by Irenaeus in A.D. 130 to A.D. 202, as quoted by Eusebius, a church historian, in A.D. 325. He wrote this: "We will not, however, incur the risk of pronouncing positively as to the name of the Antichrist. For if it was necessary that his name should be distinctively revealed in this present time, it would have been announced by him who beheld the apocalyptic vision. For that was seen not very long time since, but almost in our day toward the end of Domitian's reign." What is he saying? This is exactly what he wrote. For that was seen, that what? John, or the apocalyptic revelation that was written? That was seen not very long time since, but almost in our day, toward the end of Domitian's reign. We will not, however, incur the risk of pronouncing positively as to the name of Antichrist. There are things about this statement that need to be noted. First, Irenaeus did not witness this. He referred to Polycarp, a disciple of the Apostle John. Secondly, the key part, for that was seen not very long time since, is ambiguous. According to Irenaeus' recollection, Polycarp thought that Eusebius was referring to be sometime in AD 95 or 96, during the last part of Domitian's reign. That's why they put it there, is because of when Domitian died. Thirdly, we do not know if that Polycarp was referring to was John, the Antichrist, or the book itself. And we don't know if he meant that the book was written at that time or not. Furthermore, it comes to us through statements of three people, Polycarp, Irenaeus, and Eusebius, separated by 300 years. This statement, even with all of its uncertainty, is the only evidence used to support the late date theory. It has been accepted by generations of people without really questioning it or examining it in light of the book itself. The late date has been passed on to us in the same way it was passed on to Eusebius, handed down by the tradition of the Catholic Church. Another statement by Irenaeus, however, seemed to indicate that the early date is more correct. In his fifth book, he speaks as follows concerning the apocalypse of John and the number of the name of the Antichrist, in quotation, as these things are so, and this number is found in all the approved and ancient copies. Domitian's reign was almost in his own day. But now he speaks of the book of Revelation being written as ancient copies. His statement at least gives us some doubt as to the vision being seen in AD 95, which was almost in his day, and even suggested a time somewhat removed from his own day for him to consider the copies to him as ancient. Those who hold to the early date feel it's much more likely that John wrote the Revelation prior to AD 70 during Nero's reign, AD 54 to 68. Their position was that it is reasonable that the coming destruction of AD 70 was the reason that the letters to the seven churches be written, given them urgent instruction, edification, and admonishment, and that the destruction of AD 70 was the things which must shortly come to pass in Revelation 1:1, and what was referred to by the statement, the time is at hand, in Revelation 1:3. Another consideration that gives strength to the position for the early date is history tells us that the Apostle John was freed from being exiled to Patmos, then went to Ephesus and later died there. It was Roman law that those exiled by the emperor were to be freed when the emperor died, and Nero died in AD 68. Therefore, if the Apostle John was exiled by Nero and not Demetrius, he would have been freed in AD 68, and the Revelation would have been written by or before Nero's death and before the destruction of AD 70. There is more than one theory as to the fulfillment of the book of Revelation. One theory is it was fulfilled prior to AD 70, the entire book. Another theory is that it was to be fulfilled in the future from the time it was written. Our position is it was written prior to the destruction of AD 70, and that the purpose of writing to the seven churches of Asia was to prepare them for this destruction and final judgment upon the Jewish world. Thus, chapters 1 through 3, surely the God will do nothing, but he revealeth his secret unto his servants the prophets, Amos 3:7. Then chapters 4 through 22 is the revelation of prophecy for the church and the future of the Gentile world. It would be good here to consider that God gathered a harvest in the end of the Jewish world, gathering his people together in one body and one faith. Ephesians 4, 11 through 13, and a portion of the overcomers, our bride, was made up, that is, to rule and reign with Christ 1,000 years. Then God's judgment, the day of wrath or vengeance, came in A.D. 70. The church was falling away, as described by the Apostle Paul in 2 Thessalonians 2, 3, verse 7, and 1 John 4 and 1. Therefore, the last days of the Jewish world and after its harvest, the apostles began to leave the scene after the gospel had been given to the Gentiles. And the Gentiles world, well, I could go on, but I'm just laying a foundation for, the date that it was written and why my position's on it like it is. Like I said, if it were to be written in A.D. 95 or 96, which really with the evidence that I've been able to come up with so far, I just don't think it's as reasonable a position as the early date position, especially with our knowledge of perfection and overcoming and the destruction of that world in A.D. 70, where the religious world really doesn't have an understanding of perfection, and therefore they wouldn't see a need or the urgency of these letters being written prior to A.D. 70. And it'd be easier for Eusebius to think that it could have been under Domitian's reign, but it's very ambiguous, the statement that he made. And then Irenaeus, remember, was from A.D. 120 to 202. And in his fifth book, he's writing that the apocalypse, that they still had the ancient copies of the apocalypse. If John wrote it in A.D. 95 and 96, it would have still been brand new writings by A.D. 100. It wouldn't even be 100 years old. When Irenaeus wrote this, was well before he died, and he was calling it ancient copies. Irenaeus was a priest of the Catholic Church and a historian. Well, Polycarp was a disciple of John, but see, if it was A.D. 70, if it was written before A.D. 70, I don't know. That's another thing I'd like to find is the dates of Polycarp's life. Somebody find us that. Because he would have had to been a young man, at least no younger than a young man, by A.D. 68 or 65, somewhere in there, if he was a disciple of John. And he could have been in his 70s, 60s or 70s, but Irenaeus wasn't born until A.D. 120. So Polycarp was no doubt an old man when Irenaeus knew him. Huh? What is it? Yeah, and you talk slower too. Go ahead. A.D. 69. He was born in 69. He lived to be, that would put him. A.D. 69 to 155 would make him 95. No, 86 years old. Well, if he's born in 69 and John died in the early 70s or say by 78, he wouldn't have been but a boy. He wouldn't have been but 9 or 10 years old. We don't know when John died. He died in Ephesus, but they don't have a year. See if anybody can find a year on that. But I've never been able to find that. That's, you know, that would tell us something if we knew the year John died. Yeah, he died a martyr. They boiled him in oil once when he didn't die. Well, because we always thought that the book of Revelation was written in A.D. 95. So we thought he was there all these years, you know, probably from A.D. 70 on. But we don't have any real true dates, you know. Like I said, my position is that the book of Revelation was written before A.D. 70. We might get some more light on Polycarp if we could find any history on him or what he had to say about John. That's another traditional thought of him being a disciple of John, or of John's ministry. I know that it's at least thought he's a disciple of John's ministry. Huh? But still, the position that I would have would be that if it was written in the late date, that the promise to the seven churches would be promises to overcomers. Yes. Who? That would make sense since they think he wrote the book of Revelation in A.D. 95. But we don't have any proof. They don't have any facts of his, you know, of his death. And I'm not sure they've got any on Polycarp. I'd like to find that more out about that. We'll do some more. It prompts my mind to do some more study on that. All right. Mr. Google, right now we're listening to what Google says.